Production funding for Behind the Headlines is made possible in part by the WKNO Production Fund, the WKNO Endowment Fund, and by viewers like you. Thank you.
Helping people in need during the holidays and during coronavirus, tonight on Behind the Headlines. I'm Eric Barnes with the Daily Memphian. Thanks for joining us as we continue to do the show remotely. Today, I am joined by Kathy Pope, President and CEO of the Mid-South Food Bank, Sally Jones-Hines, President and CEO of MIFA, and Bill Dries, reporter with the Daily Memphian. Sally, I'm going to go to you first. We tend to do a show. We've had you on a number of times this time of year to talk about MIFA's work and other organizations' work, particularly, you know, how the needy struggle and what they need more of during the holidays. But obviously, this year is an entirely different level of need, given coronavirus, both the medical and social realities of it, but also the economic impact that the whole country, the whole world has seen. So try, if you could, Sally, in some form or fashion, kind of quantify what you all have seen in terms of, I assume, increased need from people in all your various programs. But you tell us.
Thanks, Eric. And that certainly is true that since the pandemic began, we have seen increased need in both our emergency assistance for families, that's rent, mortgage, and utility assistance, and also serving our senior neighbors with home-delivered meals. And the challenge was that we had to change our way of operations as well as meet the increased need at the beginning of the pandemic, because of course, we needed to minimize interaction. We just had to find new ways to do things. So our emergency assistance staff went home. We put that application process online and tried to move forward with that. And our meals delivery, we went to delivering meals 3 days a week and then taking additional frozen or shelf stable meals for those days that we weren't delivering. Families, seniors that we used to serve at congregate meal sites, we've switched to a grab and go sort of process where every Monday, seniors can go to the site where they used to eat together and pick up a box of 5 frozen or shelf-stable meals. But to give you an idea of numbers, we have increased, fortunately, we have been able to increase service in all of our programs. We've partnered with the city for their emergency relief program. We had some CARES Act funding of $3.5 million, which has been a godsend. But in a typical, from July through November, we have assisted over 4,000 families. And in a typical year at MIFA, we provide assistance to about 3,000 to 3,500 families. Yeah. So we have already seen just an enormous increase.
Well, we'll talk some more about your, I'm going to go to Kathy, but we'll talk some more about the details and some of the specific programs. But turning to you, Kathy, what you all serve, not just Memphis, not just the Memphis area, it's a 30 county region, including, you know, rural West Tennessee, parts of Mississippi and Arkansas. Let me just start with the basics. What have you seen?
Yeah, well, we serve 31 counties, 18 in North Mississippi, 12 in West Tennessee, and then Crittenden over the river in Arkansas. The need that we've seen, the increase, has been really astounding. So just to put some numbers on it, like Sally did, prior to the pandemic, our food bank would have distributed 1.5 million pounds of food every month. Since April, we have averaged 5.5 million pounds every
month.
We've had months it was over 6 million pounds. We would generally do the way we get the food out in the community, two ways mainly, through our 300 partner agencies, of which Sally, MIFA's one. But these are our brick and mortar pantries that are used to serving, you know, their neighborhood, their neighbors. So those 300, some of those are run by seniors. So we saw a decrease in the amount of pantries that were open in April, May, June. So what we did is we increased our mobile distributions. That's where we just load the truck up. We've got the families, you know, we've advertised it. We have a partner to help us distribute the food. We go that morning by 4 hours. Everything is gone. Everybody goes home with food, and then we start all over. So prior to the pandemic, we were doing about 60 mobile pantries a month. And since the pandemic, since April, we have averaged 220. That's how we've been able to get so much food out the door.
And it's just staggering to think about those numbers and the increases. I hate to ask this question, but is that enough? I mean, how many do you wish you could do more? Is the need even greater than what you're able to satisfy at this incredibly elevated numbers?
Yes, the need is a bit greater. I think we've done a great job of getting that much food in the warehouse and then out the warehouse. It's been a challenge to find that much food and find the resources, but we've got great new partnerships. USDA has been tremendous. With some of they've increased their emergency food to us. The Farmers to Families Food Box program, if you heard about that in the community, was tremendous for us. And then Tennessee Emergency Management has been incredible. So we've got some partnerships and they're temporary, you know, that source of food will go away. But we have had distributions. We started out saying, okay, we can serve 300 families, but 500 would be in line, and then we would serve 500, and then 800 would be in line. We have had to turn families away at distributions, but we always give them another resource for other mobile pantries. We're doing like 16 mobiles on a Saturday. It's, you know, we hire drivers, we rented trucks, we just like pull out all the stops. What can we do to make sure that we're getting that amount of food out the door? Obviously, a concern for all of us is how long do we need to maintain this quantity?
Yeah, and I'm going to bring Bill in. We'll dig in some more of what you just talked about, but let me get Bill Dries in the mix here.
Sally, early on in this, in March and April, we saw some disruption in the supply chain for food for supermarkets. Has that translated into what you've seen as well?
We have been very fortunate with the vendors that we work with for our meals for seniors. So we did not see any disruption. Early on in the pandemic, we made an effort to get extra food into the homes of all of the seniors that we serve. So we got some extra frozen, some extra shelf stable. With that in mind, worried about a disruption in the supply chain or another reason with an infection or something due to COVID that we might have to close our kitchen for a week or two. And fortunately, we have not had to do that, but we were intent early on to get extra food out in case of any of those issues.
Mm-hmm. And Kathy, as Sally has said, this has really forced, I think, everyone who does any kind of distribution to just rethink their whole logistical model for distribution. Let me ask you about the surge that we're currently in. How does this compare to where we were at the start of this in March and April when things were really bad?
We're all concerned we're going to go right back there, right? We have kind of gotten in our groove. I know Sally would agree. We figured out how to make this work. We figured out food out the door. I've kept a lot of people out of our building. Whoever could work from home did. The agency relations people are out at the mobile distribution. So we're getting a little more strict with that now as we see this surge coming. At one point we had no volunteers in the building. We let them come back in, very slowly, 10 at a time as opposed to 50 at a time. We social distance. We have all of the protective gear for them. But that's what we're concerned about is as people, if we're going to shut down, if there are more layoffs, if there are more closings, the lines that we have now, and I know you've probably seen it on TV, the cars are lining up for these distributions. I'm scared we're going to have more than 800 in those lines. Mm-hmm. actually have distributions. We're serving 1,000 families at a time. So yeah, we're concerned about the quantity, but just like Sally, we're coming to work every day. We're figuring out where the food is. We're figuring out how to partner with our neighbors. And that's been a big help, the new partners that we've gotten to help us get this food out.
Who are the new clients that you've seen, the new people coming for assistance in all of this?
Yes, we have seen people that have never been in a food line, probably didn't even know what the food bank did, didn't know how to go get help. So we really made sure early on that as we talked about the work we were doing, we wanted people to go to MidSouthFoodBank.org, and you can find food there. You can find food by putting in your zip code. Or we are advertising the mobile pantries for a 7-day cycle. So you can go on MidSouthFoodBank.org, click mobile pantries, and you can find a distribution. So that's kind of what we've been doing to make sure that people could get help. But these are people that their grandparents, and now they're raising grandchildren, and those children are home from school. You can just imagine if you have lost your job, you don't have unemployment or it's ran out, whatever your situation is, that's a pretty stressful situation to be in. So we are talking with people in our food lines as we're giving them the paperwork to fill out. And that's what we're finding, is that a lot of these people are brand new to a food line.
Right. Sally, same question for you before I go back to Eric here. Who are the new clients that you've seen?
Well, I'd like to say two things. Certainly with utility and rent assistance, we are seeing people who never thought they would have to ask for that kind of assistance before, who had jobs in restaurants or tourism or whatever, and their incomes were impacted by COVID and by shutdowns. Our Meals on Wheels program, I would like to say we've been glad to take people from the waiting list, but you know, as you've had me on before, that I always rail at the fact that we have seniors in our community who are on a waiting list at all. You know, that should be at zero. So we're glad that we have been able to take seniors out of that, but I won't be happy until that waiting list doesn't exist.
Let me stay with you, Sally, and talk about, much of what we're talking about right now is the economic impact that the pandemic shutdown. You mentioned tourism and restaurants and just job losses and so on. There's also just the tremendous emotional strain that so many people have had. And I think, you know, you all do many programs, probably in some ways best known for the Meals on Wheels program. But let's just start there. I mean, you've talked before about the isolation in normal times that the seniors you all serve feel. Well, now I can't imagine, you know, and yet you've got volunteers who have to stay distanced, who have to stay mm-hmm. masked. It's ever harder to make any sort of connection. What have you done, or have you been able to do anything on that more emotional strain side of things?
Well, we have. Yes, we put all of those protocols Kathy was mentioning for volunteers in place, so that we have curbside pickup for our volunteers. We have contactless delivery to the client. But we are so worried about isolation, because that can impact health almost as much as nutrition. So we have started, or we had this program in place, but we've really raised it another level or two, called My Phone Buddy, where volunteers call our homebound senior clients, and especially on those days that we are not delivering. And volunteers are enjoying it because it's something they can do from home. They're not out interacting. And what we often find is that conversations are a lot longer than just that knock at the door and leaving a meal. And what has also been nice is that many of our volunteers who felt nervous about continuing, our regular meals volunteers who felt nervous about doing that and wanted to take a pause, have called the clients they used to deliver to. So they have volunteered to make those phone calls. And it's one of those silver linings. I hate to use that, but I think it will certainly be a problem that we keep after this, hopefully, is we are through
Yeah. Have you seen, and I don't mean to dwell in the the darkness here, but I think it is important to talk about these things, you know? I mean, because I think there is a degree to which we all, myself included, get a little bit numb, you know, because it's been so long, the coronavirus, it sometimes is very political. And I feel like the work y'all do is just very real and apolitical, right? And so it's helpful. But you all, MIFA also works with, I believe, some domestic violence programs, some homeless programs, if I'm not mistaken. People have talked about fears of, and I guess the numbers of, you know, domestic violence on the rise because people are somewhat trapped together. They're not, people are, economic frustration, economic, you know, just all the factors are there. How has that gone and how have you been able to respond if there has been an increased level of homelessness and domestic violence?
Mm-hmm. I can't really comment on the domestic violence. I don't have, you know, we do partner with the Family Safety Center on that and they would probably have more information. But our assistance for families who are experiencing homelessness, there are stresses there. It's many different things. In some cases, families who were living with grandparents and doubling up are just hunkering down and sticking it out, and which is sometimes the best thing and sometimes not, but there's fewer places for them to go. And then on the other hand, of course, shelters are, you know, congregate settings that, yeah, that are stressful places. We're really grateful for those that are continuing to serve. Kathy has talked a lot about partnerships, and I think one thing that has happened, we've always worked together, all of us in the nonprofit who are meeting the needs in the community, but certainly I think during this crisis, I have to give a hats off to our partners at the city and our partners at the county. Kathy and I are both on the COVID-19 response team calls, and the leadership from the city and the county and working to meet the needs of those experiencing homelessness has, I think, been really fantastic. They're doing the best they can with a really challenging
situation. Yeah, we had Paul Young on the show, what seems like 100 years ago, the director of housing community development for the city, and talked about how they were trying to get, you know, homeless families and people into hotels that were underutilized because of the pandemic and so on. Let me go back to you, Kathy, and something you alluded to, certain programs, and I was curious which ones that you mentioned could be ending. You talked about the success of the various federal programs, the USDA and the farmer program that was sending, you know, fresh food from farms to people nationally. What programs are you fearing are going to end, and what kind of impact that have on your ability to continue to use?
Well, I know that Tennessee Emergency Management, obviously at some point that's going to end because they come in when we're in a disaster mode, which is what we're in right now. And they've been very, very generous to the 5 food banks in Tennessee. Well over 14 million pounds have gone into the state because of their purchases. So, but again, that's not going to be a program that will continue. So that'll be a loss, but you know, we're still, as I talk with my leadership team, we're like, leave no stone left unturned. Where's the food? Where are the food sources? Feeding America has been very generous because they have a portal that we've been able to go to get food. The Farmers to Families Food Boxes program, that was also through USDA, really great program. And the advocates in the feeding world are advocating for that program to continue. Again, who knows, because we only have so much money to spend on these programs, but really great program. So I would say those are the two that we're going to really miss. We hope that as we go through this next 12 months, that we do see a decrease in need, obviously, at some point. So we're not going to need to stay at this 5.56 million pound a month quantity of food going out the door. But we do feel like we're going to need to stay there for a good while. And then we feel like our goal is to drop it to about 4 million. That should meet the need in the Mid-South. But again, it depends on how long this goes on and any other shutdowns and how long it takes people to bounce back.
Let me get Bill back in the mix here.
Yeah, to stay with you, Kathy, it's also, there's so much I think hope and confidence in the vaccines that are coming soon, that I think maybe we kind of forget that financially people are going to need a little time to get back on their feet, even after everybody's going in for the vaccine. So it's not as simple as the vaccine's here. Oh, we can close up shop, right?
Yes, that's exactly right. And that's what we know, that a lot of the people that we were serving before, obviously they're living in poverty, they're not making ends meet, and then now they haven't gotten a paycheck. They're not going to bounce back in 2 months. It's going to take a long time for them to bounce back. And that's why I think the programs that Sally and I both run are so very important, because we're meeting that basic need of food. And I know Sally does more than that, utility assistance and all of that. But we all have to have nutritious food to feel healthy and to have the energy to work. And just that basic need, we think, is going to be there. So if we can help with that, then we're allowing people more time to, they can spend the money that they are earning to catch up on bills, catch up on rent. So that's where we feel like these two programs are just so important to our community.
Mm-hmm. Sally, we are a city that has a lot of poor people living in poverty, people who work, people who are chronically unemployed, both categories on that. Has this crisis exposed an ongoing need that maybe we couldn't get at before? Because a lot of social justice advocates and people who work for those causes have made the comment early on that the pandemic has really exposed a need that was there all along, but that we just couldn't get to before this.
I think that's exactly right, Bill. And if that is something that the exposure of those basic tears in our system that just seem unacceptable to me, if that is something that we don't let get hidden again, so that we continue to look for solutions to make real changes in our community, I think that might be another silver lining. I hate that we had to go through this, but I don't want to get back to normal. You know, I want to be better. And I think that's a message out of all of this. And I do just want to concur with Kathy that we are concerned about what happens in January with a lot of the CARES Act money and the deadline for spending that being at the end of December. And then the eviction moratorium and these things that will happen in January. It's difficult really to estimate what that need might look like until we hit it, but I'm nervous about it.
Right. And before we go back to Eric, Kathy, after this is all said and done, hopefully sometime next year, are there things you've done logistically in all of this that will become best practices, perhaps?
Yes, I'm really proud of how our team has responded to, we've mapped out our communities, and if there was a community that did not have a brick and mortar pantry, we have made sure that we are getting mobile distributions into those communities, because we've got food deserts here. We have some communities that weren't being served. We've got a Hispanic community that we've responded to really well with some new partnerships that we hope to continue, so they can help us get that food out the door. So I'm really happy that we've been able to spot some holes in our system, if you will, some food deserts that need that consistent distribution. So we've set that up. We've also partnered with Neighborhood Christian in home delivered meals, because again, right away we were getting calls with people who couldn't get out and needed home delivery. So we're going to continue that. And we are also in our rural areas, we are getting food boxes into most of our communities that we serve by way of the police department, because in these small rural communities, they know who's struggling. And so all of those programs are definitely going to continue.
Let me stay with you, Kathy. You know, one thing that obviously a huge impact of the coronavirus has been on the schools, and Shelby County Schools has remained doing virtual with virtually no in-person learning through the fall. Have you seen, there's a tremendous amount of free school lunches that are taken care of sometimes 2-3 times a day for kids. How has that impacted? Have you seen that, or do you even have a guess that that has partly driven the need that you're seeing at your various distribution locations?
I had just gotten here a year ago in August, and fortunately, when I got here, I kind of want to know what all's going on in the community, right? Like, how are we feeding people? How are we feeding our kids? Who's running these after-school feeding programs? So I had already met with Brian at the YMCA prior to the pandemic. So when it hit and YMCA came in and they took over that feeding the children, we partnered with them. And so they actually bring their food here to our warehouse, and we've given them refrigerated space so that they can store them, and they line up every morning, fill their trucks up, and go out to their 60 feeding sites. Well, we partnered with them at many of those feeding sites, and we did food distributions there. So as the families were coming to pick up that one or two meals for their child, they were able to get a food box for the whole family. So I feel like that has been a great partnership, that we've been able to really get additional food out and target the Shelby County school kids. We've also partnered with Shelby County Schools, and we've done kid-friendly mobiles at schools, at high schools, through this entire pandemic. So great partnerships to feed our kids.
We could talk more. We're running out of time. I assume people who want to help, whether that's volunteer time or money, they can go to your website. Is that right, Kathy? MidSouthFoodBank.org, is that right?
Yes, MidSouthFoodBank.org, correct.
And for you, Sally, I mean, I assume people can help by going, there are volunteer opportunities, there are opportunities to donate money.
Yeah, exactly. I find it all on the website, MIFA.org.
Okay, well, thank you both for being here. I really appreciate it, and appreciate the work that you all and your organizations do. That is all the time we have this week. Remember, you can get past episodes of the show on the WKNO website at WKNO.org, or download the full podcast of the show from the Daily Memphian site or wherever you get your podcasts.